Good morning. This is John Patika Jr. with the UBS Wealth Management Group, and I'd like to welcome you to 2020. And I'm here along with John Patika Sr., who's our Senior Portfolio Manager and 2021 Forbes Magazine Top Wealth Advisor in the state of Florida. And we'll be talking today about our team's thoughts on the year ahead. We'll turn it over to Senior here in just a minute, but just looking back at the year that was, you know, there was some positive things happening in the second year of the pandemic for the consumer. You know, first, everywhere you go, there seems like there's plenty of jobs to be filled. The wages are rising for the workforce. Mortgage rates are still very low. And there's still tons of cash in savings accounts, almost $2 trillion in savings consumer bank accounts. Plus, it was another strong year in the equity markets. And it seems like the pandemic continues to improve with people learning to live with this. Last I read, there was about 8.5 billion vaccine shots administered globally, and you had some antivirals coming along. It's about to be approved by regulators, but you know, this call isn't about looking backwards. It's about looking ahead. And we got a lot of questions emailed to us this week prior to the call. And, you know, we try to consolidate them and cover, you know, the subjects the best we can in the time we have, but most of these Senior and James and I have covered, you know, in our strategy session. So we're happy to take them on. And let's go ahead and get started here. And the most common question we receive by far is the subject of inflation. So Senior, that's a great place to start. And I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, John. Well, look, let's get right to it. It all begins with printing money. Inflation does. Printing money causes inflation. We had $5 trillion in pandemic spending. You know, most importantly, though, the money supply, which is M2, is up 39% since COVID. That's not like taxing one person and giving it to another, which would be neutral. This is fresh new money. And unlike 2008, that's a key point, when they printed money and gave it to the banks, and the banks kept it, they needed it for their solvency. This time, they printed it and spread it around. So they gave it directly to the people who spent it. If you remember the 1500, then another 1500, and $300 per child per month. And then the big one was the PPP loans to the small business, which the government, after they gave them these loans, they forgave the loans. So that made it free money. Then on top of that, they allow them to deduct the money from their taxes. Good example, I know a business that got about $1 million. They had a great year on top of that. Then they got to write it off their taxes. So very awesome for business, but very inflationary. There is a lot of money circulating. Another big contributor to inflation, I think, and I'll hit some bullet points, China. You know, for decades, we have been importing deflation from them. Cheap stuff in the form of cheap goods, anything from steel to little widgets. Now that's reversed, and we seem to be importing inflation from them. The stuff we import from them has gone up higher than our rate of inflation here. So that's a big deal. Wages. It's a tight labor market. Everybody knows that. Higher wages. Hopefully technology will lead to higher productivity and help offset some of that. We'll see. Food. You know, little things that just multiply. Fertilizer prices tripled in some cases, especially if their base is nitrates. That affects the price of food and feedstock and fuel now with the ethanol. Just a little note, 40% of our corn crop now goes to ethanol. So you're taking a food and feedstock and putting it in ethanol. I'll talk a little more about that later. Housing. You know, you can say houses went up 20%, but rental prices of houses is up. And that's a big part of the CPI. This is going to be one of the key drivers for inflation in 2022, as I see it. And then you look at what happened to material prices for the builders, the lumber, the copper, the aluminum, etc. And then you get the supply chain interruptions that really shook things up. You know, the Port of Los Angeles, everybody knows these stories. But one thing you have to remember, there's a lot of smart people working the other end of this problem. You know, you heard the stories where Home Depot, Walmart, and Target, they leased smaller boats so they could go up to Portland and San Francisco. A lot of companies used air cargo. That bogged their handlers down too. But I think this one's just going to fade away in 2022. Just on a personal note, you know, I get to follow Linda around once in a while in Publix pushing the grocery cart. And I happen to look at a package of bacon, $7.99 for 14 ounces. Well, everybody knows there's 16 ounces in a pound, and $7.99 is $8. I can do the math in my head per pound. And what you see is people, you know, and you can talk to anybody, cereal, coffee, the whole nine yards. They'll start making adjustments, which will ease some of the pressures, the upward price pressure. So basically, that's a big deal when people start shopping and it hits them that, hey, I'm not doing this. So we think maybe inflation has peaked here already. It's going to moderate. It's certainly not going to go away. It's not transient, that's for sure. I don't think you'll see 6.8 next year. Anyway, I could talk on inflation all day, but I'm going to end it right there.
Well, I can only imagine you walking around the grocery store with my mom looking at prices of food. So God bless her soul.
Well, that was the first book I ever read. Peter Lynch went up on Wall Street. He says, make sure you go shopping with your wife and see what's happening, what they're buying. It is an eye-opener.
In my household, it's just look at what they deliver, the bags out in the front door. So anyway. Our next question is about interest rates. You know, we're already seeing the 10-year Treasury move up to 1.7%. Just want to get your thoughts on interest rates this year.
Yeah, and that's a big deal when you're talking about mortgages, what people can afford and what they qualify for. The Fed's expected to raise rates three times in 2022. Personally, I'm betting on the under. I don't think they're going to do that in an election year. The big deal is the tapering. It started in November. They were buying $120 billion a month of the mortgages and of our own treasuries. And they started cutting back, as I said, in November. And they plan to stop buying by March. And just to give you a flavor of that, right now, they own 50% of all the treasuries maturities between 10 and 20 years. They own 30% of the treasuries between 20 and 30 years. So 10 and 20 years, 50%, 30% of the 20 to 30 year maturities, and then 15, 20, 25% of all the other maturities. They own a ton of this stuff. And so the big question will be, are they going to just continue rolling them as they mature, which is neutral for the money supply? Are they going to let them mature and take the money off the table? And that's going to be a bigger question, if you ask me, than a couple of quarter point increases in the lower end of the rate. So obviously you got to adjust, but so will they.
Yeah. Our next question, which seems to be a really hot topic everywhere you go, is a question about energy. And do you think the outperformance will continue? And what are your thoughts on energy?
I like energy. I could talk about energy all day. And I think we can make some money here in 2022. Basically, the pre-COVID world used a little over 100 million barrels of oil a day. Back up now roughly to 96 million barrels and climbing. Gasoline's already higher than pre-COVID. You know, at about $80 a barrel now, those are the basics. So a couple things to keep in mind. There's 281 million light-duty vehicles right now on the road in the United States, 281 million. Demand here will not fall right off the table. You can do what you want on electric cars, but these things are going to be with us for a long time. So when you look at some of the big oil companies, we think that they can make money at $60 a barrel and pay their dividend and grow which is a big deal. Above that, they can make a lot of strategic investments in the future, like the huge investments that they've made in biofuels. The biofuels have become very profitable for them. They get tax credits. They get regulatory credits that they can sell. This has become a big deal for the big oil companies. And they're pushing that. You think it's counterintuitive, but they make more money on that than they do refining a regular barrel of oil. So they're pushing that. We like pipelines. I always say, if you can't build new pipelines, then the old ones are more valuable. They pay nice dividends. You're always in this industry worried about regulations. In fact, the rig count, it's only at 45% of what the pre-COVID times were. So they're not in a hurry to ramp up. A lot of times at $80 a barrel, they're ramping up. They're not doing that. There's some neat new technologies out there. I'm reading about what might work. Hydrogen, what's going to work? There's some being deployed in small remote communities using tides and tidal streams and waves that got my attention. Waves and tidal streams, they're much more consistent and predictable than the wind and the sun. And you got to anchor it to the bottom of the ocean and all this. But in the next 10 years out, they've got some plans for some larger projects. It might be interesting once the bigger companies get involved in that. So a lot of stuff happening in energy. We like that industry this year.
Well, how about EVs, electric vehicles? I mean, you see a lot of that on some really neat electric vehicles on commercials like Ford and GNC. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, the government is really pushing hard on this. And behind the scenes, you know, they made these new, more stringent fuel standards starting in 2023 model year. By 2026, vehicles will have to have a fleet-wide average of 55 miles per gallon. Today, it's 40 miles. The car companies say they can't do it. The EPA says they can if they sell 17% of their vehicles electric. So, I don't know, but that's what they need to do. And I thought, I wrote down some bullet points I thought that were interesting that goes to the conclusion here. Tesla sells half of all the electric vehicles. Some of their models this year, they raised the price three times. Lithium, everybody knows that's a key component in the batteries, 240% increase in lithium this year. Then you take these batteries. I was watching that thing on the people on I-95. Can you imagine being an electric car there for 18 hours? They're 40% less productive in the extreme cold. If you do the quick charges, it does start to erode the batteries much quicker because of the heat. It takes about a half hour to do a quick charge. And of course, that reduces its life. You know, if you look at a commercial, John's talking about Ford has an awesome new pickup truck, and I think it's awesome too. But if you look into it, it has a 230-mile range. If you pay up a lot of money for a higher battery, I don't remember what they call premium battery, you get 300 miles per fill up. Again, they've got 200,000 orders. We'll see what happens after that. California has half of all the EVs in the United States. If you get a 5-bay quick charge station, it takes the same electric as an entire Publix grocery store complex. Freezers, refrigerators, air conditioned, parking lot lights. That's a lot of electric. Try building high tension wires over people's head. New Mexico tried that, like 150-mile stretch. They're still trying. You get one household can stop the whole project. Very difficult. So it'll be interesting how that develops. My thoughts, they'll have an easy time selling the first couple of years, the low-hanging fruit. People want it as a second car. But I'll be surprised if the infrastructure doesn't slow it down after that. There's a lot of work to be done, and a lot of it's depending on the government getting it done. So we'll see how the infrastructure rolls out. in the end, I'd bet on the old line companies, Mercedes, BMW, Volkswagen, Volvo, GM, Ford. I think they'll win over these startup companies that people are buying and stocks, Lucid, Rivian, these guys, their stocks go crazy. In the end, I wouldn't want to bet against Volvo and BMW and the like. So anyway, it'll be an interesting thing to play. Stocks going crazy on some of these, but we'll see how that works out over the next couple of years.
Okay. Next question is, you know, I had about 10 different ones, so I try to kind of consolidate them a little bit into your thoughts on alternative assets. And the alternative assets, basically, we were getting questions on, you know, gold, silver, CNBC's favorite, you know, the cryptocurrency craze that we're going through right now. What are your just overall thoughts on alternative assets?
Yeah, I mean, gold really has not proven to be a good inflation hedge over the last couple of decades. It does better as a currency hedge. We're getting a lot of inquiries about taking delivery of gold and taking the coins versus the bars. You know, tungsten weighs exactly what gold weighs, so you wouldn't want to take a bar for delivery because people are seeding it with tungsten and you have to get it assayed to sell it. So we are sticking to anything, you know, the 1 ounce American Eagles in the gold. And if you take delivery, you got to have a long talk with me first about, you know, do you put it on your homeowners? Makes your homeowners go nuts, got a low melting point. The security you're going to have, or do you store it? You know, what's your goal for it? Are you trying to pass it down to the next generation? All kind of things like that. But if you ever want that conversation, we can have it. But gold, yeah, I don't think it hurts to have a little bit of that in here. Silver, that's more of an industrial metal now. Like it for that. Also, there's a couple of ETFs that mirror it pretty good if you don't want to buy the coin. The rest of that stuff, that's just not stuff we do. You know, crypto, if you made money on that, congratulations. I'm happy for you. The dope stocks, the meme stocks, the NFTs, most of those SPACs, you get that English guy, the Virgin Atlantic guy, you know, and it gets in there.
Branson.
Yeah, you get the stock goes up, and then all of a sudden he cashes out. The SPACs are designed to avoid the New York Stock Exchange stringent rules for initial public offerings. So how does that work? NFT, I don't understand the artwork stuff. The meme stocks, that's just collusion. If we did that, we'd go to jail. They collude on the internet to buy or short stocks. Good for them. Crypto, you can make money, but I'll tell you this, the caution I have, the more successful you are, the closer you are to the government crushing you. China bailed out on that. Government someday will have their own crypto coin, just like China. If you want to read about that, that's really an interesting experiment. Janet Yellen said she's reading about it. Someday they'll have it, and all your generation, John, you'll all put it on there, and they'll know how much everywhere you go and how much vodka you buy. But you'll see, that'll catch on at some point. They'll have their own coin or currency. The stronger this Bitcoin in that gets, the closer they come, in my opinion, to the government crushing. Remember, Franklin Roosevelt had made it illegal to have gold coins in the Depression. And the reason was because they didn't want people demanding gold. They wanted to keep using the paper money. So if you threaten that, the United States currency, you're going to get crushed. And we'll see. We'll see how that works. But my thoughts are all of our clients are already wealthy, and it's our job to keep them that way. And that's not our genre, but you can do that on your own, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Said enough.
Yeah. I mean, UBS can't buy any cryptocurrencies, or any really major wirehouses can buy the cryptos at this point. But UBS has done some really good white papers. If you guys want to actually dig deeper into it, it goes through blockchain, the NFTs, you know, basically a catch-all for all digital assets. Really good report. It's a one-on-one on digital assets. So if anybody wants that, just reach out to us. We'd be happy to shoot it over to you. The next question here is one of my favorites, is wild cards for 2022. We can go all day on wild cards, but any wild cards in your mind?
Well, yeah, a lot of them. Every year, same thing. You got all kind of things that could knock you off. And usually there's something will come by and we have to make adjustments. But, you know, they're the ones on the top of the list. I don't think anybody'd be surprised about Ukraine. You know, if Putin goes in, it's something in our meetings we talk about that would probably cause the market to go down a bit, and it would be a buying opportunity in my mind that, you know, it won't cause a fundamental change. Iran, you know, if they get this deal to come back into the fold, they'll put another couple million barrels a day on the market, so that might adjust a little bit on the price of oil. COVID's interesting. Everybody knows that. That's, I don't have any secrets in COVID. If another variant comes by that kills teenagers, you know, you could shut this country down. I don't think it's out there right now. I think we're going to get used to the current COVID, and, you know, we're going to move on, and hopefully that will be the end of it. But you can see what I'll talk about. The biggest thing is policy errors. You take a look at the country, Turkey, up-and-coming democracy, crushed by bad leadership. He took over the Supreme Court, fired all the financial people. Now they have 36% inflation. Their currency got crushed. Take a look at Germany. You want to talk about self-destructive. My goodness. Back in 2000, a 1960-era nuclear power plant in Japan, Fukushima, got wiped out by a typhoon. And then Germany and Britain overreacted. Germany had 17 nuclear power plants, 25%, more than 25% of their electric. They decided to phase out the nukes. Today, they're down to 3, which are being phased out this year. They'll all be gone. So now electricity price, which for the last 10 years averaged $50 a megawatt hour, now it's $300 a megawatt, 6 times. Think about your electric bill going up 6 times. So now the competitiveness of the industries that use a lot of energy, energy-intensive industries like glass or steel or cement, the production is zinc. I mean, they're closing down. They closed down. They're aluminum smelters. And so it affects so many things. And by the way, the French are building more nuclear power plants. They get most of their energy that way. So they put themselves at the mercy of the sun and the wind and the Russians, who, by the way, cut the flows of natural gas to them due to their production problems. So this is the self-defeating economics policy that you worry about. You know, the Brits did the same thing, very similar. You know, they capped their energy prices per household at like 1,200 pounds a month. Well, it's taken 2,000 pounds a month to break even. So many of their small utilities have gone under, and the government's had to supplement the bigger ones to take those households. You just overreact. And the French are selling the Germans electric, and we're selling them natural gas LNG shipments that were scheduled to go to Asia. They rerouted those because they're paying like 10 times more than the Chinese would pay. Just dumb. It's something you watch out for. You can make money on it. The LNG's done really well for us. So let me do one more, John. 40% of our corn crop goes to ethanol. So fertilizers are double and triple. The corn's tough on land, as you know, and the nitrates are dramatically higher. It's at least a triple. And that's the most expensive part of any corn crop. So the farmers are buying soybean seeds, which they're going to plant because it takes less fertilizer and actually put some of that back in. So we're going to have less corn next year. So what does the EPA do up wherever they're at in the windowless room? They're upping the ethanol and biodiesel requirements for this year. At the same time, they're cutting the corn crop. So what's that going to do to the price of pork and beef and my, you know, chicken and my bacon? It's gone up, obviously. Gasoline will go up. Inflation will go up in the energy field. And who's going to make the money? The big oil. They've made all these investments over the year in these biofuels, and they're selling these credits to the companies that can't make them. And all of a sudden, they're geniuses. You know, you look at Royal Dutch Shell. Royal Dutch Shell, the Netherlands were hammering them. It's been over a century, that thing. So they're giving up their home of the Netherlands, moving exclusively to England and calling themselves Shell, because the Netherlands just kept bleeding them dry. They did the same to Unilever. So, you know, money's going to find a home that wants it. And I think there's a lot of money to be made in some of these energy things as if you get some policy errors. And that's really a thing that bothers me the most. Not bothers me, when we try to make money when they do something like that. And we think we can.
Yeah, I know we can go all day on the wild cards and what could happen. But, you know, we're getting closer towards the end of our call here. And what are your just overall final thoughts before we close out?
Yeah, I know I sound negative, but all this said, I think the market's going to be pretty good in 2022. I think that they're not going to do as well as we did this year, or 2021. And the reasons are is the cash is still out there that we talked about. The velocity is still good. Private equity has a ton of money. People have money in banks, record levels in their bank accounts. So I think that you could look at profit growth for corporations. I listened to Westbury, is a favorite economist, and I believe him. He says that profit growth should be 10% over last year, even though the comps are tough. I think the corporate balance sheets are in incredible shape. They have huge cash positions. In fact, I think that's one of the cases for the market this year, is that they'll set a new record for share buybacks and dividend increase. You know, it always helps when they have that money and, you know, they'll say, okay, we're going to buy back $20 billion. And when the market pulls back, they deploy it, and it helps stem some of the pullbacks because they're buying. They feel that's the best investment for their money. Also, companies are working really hard to increase their productivity using technology. Now, they've done that for a while now, but there's some really neat things, and they're forced to do it because of the tight labor force. You know, you see some interesting things out there. I know that even in Italy, they're going nuts because they're picking grapes for wine with machines instead of people in some places. I mean, it's amazing. They're picking strawberries with machines. So I think the productivity will help them through the tight labor markets, and if they can't, then those companies won't do well. We like companies who can raise their prices and get away with it. You know, companies like Apple. If I need a new phone, I'm going to use an Apple even if they raise the price. Garbage haulers, water, you know, those people can raise their price and get away with it. We like financials. If rates go up, they'll do well. You know, there's a lot of reserves on the books that they have, you know, the Dodd-Frank that passed 10 years ago, they had to increase their reserve requirements, and they're collecting, you know, a 10th of a percent on the money they have in reserves, trillions of dollars. I think Bank America, if the rates went up 1%, make like 10 or 11 billion extra just on the interest from the reserves. We like energy and related. We talked about that. I think at $60 a barrel, they'll pay their dividends and grow. And again, with over 280 million light-duty vehicles in the United States, the oil is going to be needed for a while. The EVs will get there, but it's going to take them a while. And we'll have to adjust as that goes. And all in all, I believe that there's places in this market that we can do real well in 2022. And don't get me wrong, I think that 2021 had the lowest volatility ever. I think the biggest down was 5%.
5.2%.
One time. Biggest,
yeah, one time.
So that, I mean, it's used to like 3.5 times a year if you go back 100 years. So I think that, you know, you're going to get a little more than that just if you look at the math. But overall, I think we can make money this year in the market. And I think you have to pick the right spaces. And I think people will have to be very careful with some of these things that they made money in 2021. You're already seeing, you know, SPACs down 70%, the dopes, all that stuff's come down. That's all I have to say right now, Joe.
Okay. Yeah, it is amazing with the SPACs. You know, that was the darlings from first quarter last year. And they were on every single day talking about the boom, but nobody talked about the bust. I think it's pretty incredible. Anyway, as we wrap up our call, we hope you all found this call informative. And it will be saved as a podcast. If you have Spotify, you can actually subscribe to our podcast on there and be notified every time one gets added. You can go onto our website, the Patika Wealth Management website, and it has all the podcast recordings that on calls that we've done here since the pandemic started, when we started doing these about once a month. So we have some interesting speakers on there, and you can access that whenever you'd like. If you want any white papers on what we talked about today, feel free to reach out. UBS has some really great materials on the year ahead. They also have replays on the firm's thoughts on what's going on going forward. And they have a much more, you know, global view. UBS is a global bank, so you can hear about some things going on around the world there. Also, digital tools. Because of this pandemic, UBS has done an amazing job on technology for our clients. And most of our clients don't understand the capabilities that they have at their fingertips with the UBS mobile phone app and the iPad app. If you want a walkthrough on any of these things, please let us know. We'd be more than happy to go through it with you, because there's some amazing technology there that you have available that you might not know about. So with that, we're going to end the call. Everyone be safe, and we hope to see everybody in person really soon. Take care.